Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are here with a special guest for you, Kyle Starks. Welcome back, Kyle. Great chatting with you.
That's me. I'm Kyle Starks. Thanks for
having me. There you are. Yeah, you in the back.
Back. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Yes.
Yeah. Crazy coincidence. Kyle, excited to chat with you, particularly because after a very long wait, Vertigo is finally coming back to DC, and you have a book with Steve Pugh, who you've worked with before, as part of the opening slate of books. It's End of Life number one. It's coming out February 18th, 2026. Well, before we even get to the general pitch or like the idea of the book, I just want to talk about Vertigo in general and coming to Vertigo. We talked to Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips a couple of weeks back, and they were telling
they're
us
they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty talented, I gotta be honest. We were talking to them about how like it was almost 2 years or maybe more than 2 years since they first came on, and then ultimately there's an announcement. I know there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff to go through, but how much of a lengthy process has this been for you?
Yeah, how long of a secret have you had to keep just sitting on that whole time?
Well, we have 8 issues done.
So, wow.
So elaborate from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, First of all, there are good reasons for the delay. I guess I should listen to that podcast. Chris and Jacob are they're so good. And that I don't know if you got to read the issue. It's unbelievably good.
Yes.
Which is Peril of the Brutal Dark, an Ezra Cain mystery. It's super good. Anyway, so I don't know how much they said. And I'm, of course, a very good soldier. And I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to be very careful with my words. In terms of schedule, there is a good reason why they keep sort of pushing it back. I did believe number one would be coming out April 2025. So I did believe that was going to happen. I may have made career plans based around expecting to have maybe my biggest book ever in April of 2025 that I regret now in December 2025. But they've had good reasons. And it was going to be April. And I hope I can remember. It was going to be April. And there was just reasons for that. And I suspect those reasons are, though, is completely this is completely me guessing, is that some of those books weren't ready. Either for whatever reason they needed more time. I don't know. But that's my suspicion, is that they pushed it back to November, with my understanding, is that it would be coming out in November. And I'm like, oh, that's great. It's a month after New York Comic Con. What great timing. People will be so excited about it. And I know, and again, I know like because of the Marvel DC crossover, they did not want them competing. They did not want those two things happening at the same time, which I think is very smart, and it's very considerate of not only all of our team's works, the 4 books that are coming out, which is me and Steve Pugh doing End of Life, and Condon, and like I said, doing Peril of the Pure Dark, and Denise Camp and Stipen doing Bleeding Hearts. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. I'm almost perfect. And I assume Tynan, we don't have to worry about. He just pumps them out. So I don't know about that. It was going to be November, and then they pushed it back to February, and then they had the plan of having all the books coming out in the same month, which I think is great. So each week is sort of like week one is Nice House on the Lake, and then week two is I don't know, and then week three is End of Life, the best week obviously, and then the 4th, which I like because it's going to be those 4 books for several months before the second wave drops. And 2 of those books are supposed to be ongoings. End of Life and Bleeding Hearts are supposed to be ongoings. And Ezra Kane is sort of an ongoing. It's going to be in 6-issue blocks. So if it does well, there'll be another 6 issues, which we love because it's so good. So I think it's great to have, like, I don't know. It's like, you know, like Seinfeld's on Thursdays or what. You know what I mean? Like, I just like, I like knowing.
Yeah, it's nice. I think it's that regularity. Yeah. I feel like that's something that I have noticed in myself in the last couple of years. Like, I want someone to tell me when stuff's happening so that I don't have to be doing all of it.
What
to be a programmer.
What if you knew when things were happening crazy?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to continue on this band, Justin and I were in the crowd for the Vertigo panel, which was great. But one of my big takeaways, even beyond just, you know, getting to see the titles and hear about everything, was hearing Chris Conroy, for those who don't know, the executive editor in charge of Vertigo and Black Label and the Elseworlds titles, just talking about, like, one of his big ideas was, hey, what if we got teams who knew how to work together that could release on a regular schedule? And it's sort of crazy that there isn't more of that in the comic book industry.
It's crazy that that's an innovation. Yeah. To be like, let's get people who are already friends doing good work.
Again, I don't know how much, I think Chris is more tight-lipped than I am because he's more professional. certainly my understanding, again, like the reason, Brubaker and Phillips write a book every year, right? Like, it happens. Morrison still works with Quitely, right? I mean, like, it still happens. But I know for this, it was DC who I love because of this, which is like with the Compact Comics and Vertigo are literally like responses to like retailer concerns. Mm-hmm. So the retailers were like, they were literally like, hey, like, I, and again, some of this is speculation and it's me speaking for people who never told me anything. But I know a little bit, right? Like, it's my understanding that the reason why they did those Compact Comics, because they were basically like, hey, retailers, why is manga doing so well? And the retailers were like, oh, because they're small and they're cheap, which, by the way, is not the correct answer for why manga's doing so well, but they're great. They're doing great. DC, like, DC was like, what do we think like is needed for us to stay in the minds of sequential fans? And I believe, and it's my understanding, is that for this, the retailers, they're like, you know what else is wrong with comics is that there's not long runs with the same creative team like there used to be in the 80s and the 70s. And I go, hey, you know what? We'll try it, but you can't sell an issue 6. So I don't know how you're gonna sell an issue 32. It'll be real interesting. But so it's like them responding. And it's like, well, how do you do that? How do you get a team go that's going to be good? How do you get a book that you know is going to be good that could last for what's an ongoing in 2026? You know what I mean? Let's say 12 issues for a year's worth of comics, which is so big. That's going to be good for 12 issues. It's like, well, let's get teams that people like and they know and we know they do good work. And I think if you look at every single one of those teams, they're all – I'm on it, but they're all-star teams. You know what I mean? Like, like, there's such good combos, and like Condon Phillips is a no brainer. When I was like, who's on it? They're like, Condon Phillips. I'm like, no brainer. And, Dennis is so good and so hot right now. And everyone loved 20th Century Man. And that was long before this year. I mean, Dennis was still like me, like maybe people knew him and they liked, and some of them liked him.
People know
right?
you, Kyle.
People know you.
Listen, I know my sales numbers. But like Dennis at New York Comic Con, we did signings for the Vertigo preview. Dude, everyone was there to see Dennis. Like, everyone was there to see Dennis. He's had a huge breakout, which is great, which is what Vertigo needs, because otherwise it's kind of three lower level, like less recognized teams in James Tynan, which is great. And we're all good. Like, the thing, like, I'm so happy for Dennis, obviously, because he deserves all that. I'm super excited for Condon and Phillips because they're so good. Mm-hmm. And I'm thrilled because I think it's going to be the first time a lot of people are going to see my work. But that was the trick, right? Like, so we're going to tell these guys, like, they have some form of creative ownership, which is better than it has been. That's why all of us came back. Because if it was the same deal from last Vertigo, we'd probably be like, I don't know. Like, you won't try that hard if you don't actually, not that owning makes you more invested in telling a good story, but if I'm going to do it for a long time, a theoretical long time, like, it should be worth my time in regards to me being like proud of it, like proud of the work and not just going to work. And so getting these teams that like each other and do good work, I just think it's really smart. And DC doing those two things in particular shows that at least they're aware of sort of what the market is like today and that something needs to happen. And who knows what that is, but I think this is very smart on their part and I'm honored to be a part of it.
Well, and shouts to them for putting it out there, taking some risks. I feel like DC, especially in the last year, has been really doing that. And that's exciting from the fan side. But, I mean, there was so much hype in the room at New York Comic Con. How has it been then and since just for the line coming back and you being a part of it from fans?
I mean, I think people are excited, but I'm not the guy to ask because, literally we were walking. We were, standing in the back. You know what I mean? And it's Tynan. It's Azzarello and it's Cy Spurrier and Rigo Tamaki. It's like all these people who are huge stars, right? And then Condon and I are I was like, well, it's weird being the least known, the lowest Q rating person here. And Condon was like, I don't think it's you. And I'm like, well, you have Ultimate Wolverine and I do not. So I'm pretty sure it's me. So I'm probably the last person to ask.
Well, let me interrupt you there and say you brought the energy though on the panel that mm-hmm. You big upped Chris in a way where he was like, thank you. that was huge, I thought.
Listen, I did not want to do New York Comic Con because it's a huge inconvenience. And I the money is going down for me, which is neither here nor there. That's another podcast in terms of doing those shows, but there's so many people there. It's a lot of competition in regards to someone caring about me specifically. Right. I didn't want to do it because it's just a pain. But I knew that they were announcing the books there. I know Steve is, he refers to himself as quote participation adverse, which is a nice way to say extremely misanthropic. But I knew if I didn't go there, my book would not be talked about or it'd be passing. We might get a video and I know my intent was well, I'm a big personality. And I think people who have engaged with me like me, I say hopefully, but I think it's part of I've sold a lot of books just by being charming and somewhat funny, right? One. And it's well, look, this is my window. And I can promise you, if there was 300 people in that room, 30 of them probably really knew who I was or were familiar with my work outside of maybe Peacemaker or Lobo or Rick and Morty, right? And none of those are... Those are all books I'm very proud of, and they're very much Kyle Stark's books, extremely Kyle Stark's books, but they're not the best representation of what I do as a right. voice, as a creator. So I knew, Brian Azzarello doesn't have to do anything, and I think you saw, that's a good boy. It's a good dog. It can bark. Azzarello doesn't have to do anything. You know what? Tynan doesn't have to do anything. They don't have to do anything. They're going to sell the books they're going to sell, and it's going to be great for them. Also, people are just going to be excited about their books because they're books that people are familiar with. No one knows who I am. Chris was saying the same thing. No one knows who I am either. I'm like, I don't think that's true, but I also always assume people have better taste than they do. Everyone read that Texas Blood and Inkro Gang Massacre, right? Yeah. Surely they did. And they're you'd be surprised. And I'm like, I wouldn't be. I know what my sales numbers are. So I knew I had to go big. I also thought, if I get bored on a panel, I feel like the people in the crowd are bored. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I was bored. I think Conroy did an amazing job on that panel. I think he did the best job you could have done. It
built
was scheduled,
the hype.
It was tight.
Yeah.
And everyone got really their moment. Well. Everyone got their spotlight. It was done so well. And I told him that afterwards. But I felt like Condon, who's brilliant. I really like Ed Brubaker too. Can we say 2.0 Ed Brubaker? He's so good.
Shouts,
he's clever. Man. Dude, he does this. It's very stylistically similar. He's very similar. Super similar in terms of tone, I think, not content necessarily, but it's smart and it's well written and it's composed in a really literary writerly way. I didn't think he sold his book. I didn't think he hyped it the way it should have been. And I'm going to jump in. And he did that. He's like, you got a lot more energy than me. And I'm like, well, this is all I got. You know, this is all I can bring to the table. But it's that book is good. I read it. I haven't read the other books. I can't speak to them. I've read that book and it's dope. It's really good. And it's you got to say things hyping things is part of the job and it's hard and not everyone can do it. I don't want to say well, but it's hard. It's not we're telling stories and I don't think I'm as good as hyping. Once we get to end of life, I'll be I don't know if I actually hyped that very well. Outside of saying the same things over and over. But it's at least be who was that guy? At the very least on a panel, I want to be who was that guy? You know, maybe I'll check out the book. He seemed funny or interesting or clever or charming or I don't know, probably none of those. Like, he seemed like a real doofus, like a real extreme doofus.
Well, and I do want to talk about the book, but just to stay on this for a moment, because it is one of my, like, personal pet peeves about the comic book industry, is it kind of stinks that people have to double duty that way. We were talking about this on the live show the other day, that, like, Stan Lee obviously, like, was born to be a pitch man, but that every editor is now like, I have to be Stan Lee 2.0, I don't think is fair to their skill set. You know,
the editors?
Yeah, like that they don't have to be up there being like,
who's doing that?
Who's doing that?
Well, I think that's...
I'm not going to call out any names.
Yeah, who's doing Stan Lee stuff? None of, like, listen, Conroy did a great job, but Conroy, and I must say, like, editors are so good. I love my editors. They're the best. I'm not disparaging any of them, but it's like, it's not them who are screaming about books. It's us. Mm-hmm. It's us. And it's not, like, if it was like, oh, man, editor-in-chief Stan Lee's promoting his books real good. Wow. Really crazy. Like, wow. That's amazing. The publisher is, like, really getting on a soapbox, so to speak, and yelling about their books at the top. That's crazy. Can you imagine? Like, we're expected to do it, and our audience can't grow. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. My audience can only grow by a book doing well. And it's like, so, like, what's the marketing metric of that? Like, this is the conversation I can have at length, because it's the state of comics in December 2025 is both my favorite conversation and my least favorite conversation at the same time. Like, I love talking about it, but, like, it's a weird thing. It's like, they all have marketing departments, they all have PR people, but it's like, here I am on a podcast. Now I say this, like, and I tell my wife, like, it's like, maybe we'll do less shows next year, but, like, shows are promotion. Mm-hmm. Podcasts are promotion. And in this industry, there's only three places to promote. And it's in comic shops, which means you have to get a retailer on board to actually sell your book. And I don't mean like they don't sell books, but I mean like out of 30 books that come out every month, you got to be like, hey,
highlight.
Mine's pretty good. They won't regret if you get them to buy it for $5 or $4 or whatever it is. There's podcasts and there's social media, and social media is dying. Like, it doesn't exist in terms of what it was 7 years ago. I think a lot of people have moved to private Discords. So there is, like, even Instagram, which I thought Instagram surely will stick, is not doing well. So there's no place for even for me to go outside of Discord's newsletters, which you have to sign up for. Both of those, you have to find it and sign up for. It's bad. So, like, convention and conventions. I mean, conventions are promotion, but I think conventions and podcasting are the same. It's like, now I'm in front of an audience, if not the audience that has to deal with me every day because they've chosen to. It's me trying to find new people. And just like that, or the panel, like, I have to be there. Steve's not going to be there. And if we're both not there, like, that means our book gets maybe at best like a 20, whatever it was, 45 second video. And so it sucks, because it seems like there's probably other ways one could do it. I'm pretty sure. But we just don't.
Traditionally, just don't. Yes. And it is crazy how much of your personal pull from an audience numbers is like the defining factor in getting something over the line. Both for the ill of people who are like, I don't really have a big audience, but I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't like a literal online fan base of Substack subscribers, or someone who has a huge Substack subscribership or social media presence who doesn't know anything about comics. Is like, I've sold 3 books this year. It's like, what the fuck are we doing here? It's backwards.
It's super weird. And it's frustrating because people like comics. Like, people clearly like sequential storytelling.
And I think people want new books and new creators bad. The excitement just on our show when we say, like, oh, we really like this book, they're like, what is it? I'm dying for a new story that really gets me.
And here's my thing in that regard, especially, again, right now, because comics are so expensive. Like, they are. They're so expensive. And everything in this industry is dictated on a single floppy that comes out once every month. These kids can't wait a week to watch a TV show. Young people, like, which legit, I don't want to wait. I never liked television. I like movies. And I like television a lot now because you can watch it all on the blocks that you can control. But it's like, I didn't love waiting a week to see the next Lost. I didn't love that. Like, I did it because it was so good. But you know what? There was also, like, I don't know, some Tim Allen show on that I never watched because it wasn't worth waiting a week for, right? So today, like, we go, okay, everything is dependent on this single issue. That's $5, which is what, half of a Netflix subscription. And it comes out every month, which isn't great. And also, if it doesn't do well, there won't be more of it. And you can only get it one place. Like, it's not online. I mean, it is, but you know what I mean. It's not. We messed that up. You can't get it online. You can't get it at Walmart. You can't get it at Barnes & Noble's. You have to go to this specific place, which I say, again, I'm not disparaging anyone, a large percentage of those buildings people don't want to go to. They just don't go to them. Like, you have to want what's inside of it so bad. And I go, it's like vinyl. Like, vinyl is cool, but if you don't have a record player, one, it's not cool. Unless you just go hang it on the wall, which is fine. But you have to really like a band to go pay $30 for a vinyl, right? Like, you have to really, or you think it's so collectible, which is crazy. Like, it's great because it's entertainment to me. It's always been entertainment to me. So it's such a weird industry. And that's why I think I love what DC, I love that DC is like clearly going, oh, I remember talking to a publisher, this was like years ago. This was before I did Rick and Morty. And I was like, why don't you guys do this thing, which was like a blind box, something that everyone was doing that wasn't in comics that was doing great, right? Like a blind box or a subscription service. I was like, people sign up for those things. They just forget about it. Like, you'd make free money that you wouldn't make otherwise for like 3 months. Like, that's 3 months profit you wouldn't get otherwise. Like, just by adding like a subscription service. And the publisher said to me, and I think it's a universal, mind you, again, of different, what's the word I'm looking for? Of different, like degrees of, is that he's like, I hear what you're saying. He literally said, I'll never forget. I know where I was standing. I could walk back to where I was standing. And I was like, that's wild to me. But he said, I hear what you're saying and it's a good idea, but all I hear is that I'd have to change my business structure. And it's like, you wouldn't have to change your business structure. One, you would be adding to your business structure. You're not redoing anything. Like, comic shops and floppies that all exist, but there's other ways to do it. So like the DC thing, and again, I know it's Vertigo and it's like, I am like carrying the sign. I'm carrying the soapbox or whatever.
Sandwich board.
Yeah, the sandwich board. I'm wearing the sandwich board. Is that I think it's great that someone's trying something. And I think because of the two books I've read and Bleeding Hearts, I feel like 100% sounds like it's the same category. It's a lot of, and again, I say humbly, I say objectively, I think it's three really good creative teams that are going to do books that don't look like anything else on the shelf. It's going to look like not something you've seen a lot of. I will say, and I'll say this again, like, I think in life, one of the things I love about it is that it's an extremely Kyle Stark book. I think Peacemaker was an extremely Kyle Stark's book. It does everything I wanted to do. So similar to Peacemaker, sure, but I don't think there's anyone else who makes comics like me. I don't think there's anyone who makes comics like Condon and Phillips. I don't think there's anyone who makes comics like Dennis Camp. So like, they're unique, which I think is the Vertigo thing, right? So I think it's so smart to be like, hey, comics can be other things and they can be really good, which if you think about it, if you pull, that's what Vertigo was to start with, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was originally. It's like, hey, you know, this can be, and I don't think End of Life necessarily falls into, they can be high art, they can be cerebral, they can be beautiful, they can be adult, which is important to comic book readers for some reason. They can be mature. and so like, that's smart, because you know what manga is? It's not superheroes and huge stakes. It's ultimately weird characters doing weird things. And I think those three books all do that. So I think it's something that you could sell. If someone's like, oh, I'm interested in getting comics and it's Vertigo week, or because look at Absolute Batman. Like, there's a lot of people who came in that don't read comics because they're like, I hear it's cool. And you go, you hope that's the case. You hope people go, these are cool. For a month, it's going to be cool. We hope you have $20.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Well, let's talk about specifically end of life then. So the general concept, I'll give the pitch a little bit and then you flesh it out.
I'm bad at it.
Yeah, it's basically an assassin kind of gets screwed, and he has to run away, go home, the one place he doesn't want to go. And it follows what happens as he ends up in his hometown, as this assassin organization called the Menagerie is maybe on his tail at the same time. That's kind of the gist of it. But like you were saying, it is a very Kyle Starks book because it called to mind a lot of the other things that you've done, like Assassination certainly came to mind, top of mind there. It's also a little bit like Gross Point Blank. It reminded me of that a little bit, just because assassin coming to a small town. Mm-hmm. But you got the humor. You do have very much like the mature themes and adult storytelling that's happening in there. And you also have some gross ultra-violence happening at the same time. So what did I miss? What did I miss in the pitch?
That was pretty good. When I say this phrase over because I love like a very concise, like, I feel like that says it, but when we had gone through some other stuff, which was trying to figure out what Vertigo was going to be. So like, I was there from the very beginning, I think. And there was some other stuff that they're like, no, that's not. And I was like, I have an idea. It's John Wick meets Northern Exposure. Like, I just wanted to do. And the other thing, and Conroy said this, and I'm like, I'm glad someone else said it, because I don't want to say it. But to me, it's like, it's very similar to if Preacher didn't move, if they just kind of stayed in one place. Whereas, like, I wanted this sort of, like, nonstop barrage of new characters and these sort of new story tones and how they would affect the main character's name is Eddie, how it would work with his dad, who he doesn't get along with, though I think his dad sort of regrets that he made it that way. Like, it's these complicated, his first love is there. And then of course, every issue, someone different is trying to kill him. And that varies from the Menagerie to there's a local, the local crime boss. I love a roadhouse. I love a small town despot is a, canceled newspaper comic artist, who's turned to crime since he can't make comics anymore. And we love that. So he's sort of like the roadhouse boss of this area, and Eddie has to deal with that. It's fun. Again, I think Steve's doing great things. I think the emotionality is unique. And I think being very character driven, I think the way that I do that is unique. It's huge action. I think it's a fun romp. I'm hoping over the next year to maybe make someone cry at some point, but I want to have a lot of fun before that. And I think that's like sort of the Preacher thing, right? It's like, here's these sort of three characters that we're sort of hanging out with, and bad things are happening every month, and different bad things are happening every month. Yeah, see, I'm not great at talking about it. I wish I was better.
No, it's great. Really good. I think it's really need good. Another Kyle Starks to be sitting next to you.
Yeah. No, that's too many. That's too many Kyle Starks.
You really looked at the imaginary Kyle next to you. We conjured him. The monkey's paw.
Oh, my God. I have so much work to get done. I would love it.
Yeah, just do a Multiplicity. Do a Multiplicity.
That worked out famously, I think.
It did in the movie, Multiplicity. I really like the issue without spoiling too much about it that we've talked about, like the general gist of it. One of the things that I was always very impressed, and I'm always impressed by with your work, is there's so much that's set up in this first issue. Like, you ran through a lot of those different things, but it always feels well balanced, and it's always very focused on the main character. So at this point, you're very experienced in writing comics. Is that something that comes naturally, or do you have to sort of like massage it so that it really does feel like, okay, we're popping up this bit here and bringing in the Menagerie, and now we're bringing in the dad, and now we're bringing in canceled cartoonist?
Yeah. That's a good question. No, I think it's maybe natural, which is a bad answer, but I feel like it's something that I've really had to work on. The first issue should set it up. Like, it's not like TV where you have a pilot and the pilot does set up, but it does it poorly. I think first issue comics need to do two things. They need to set up what the story is, what's going to happen. And they need to, be good. They need to be like at 11, because you need to be like, I want to know what's happening next. I think it's the two most important things that an issue can do. A first issue can do. I think like, I Hate This Place. Like, I nailed it. Like, I Hate This Place is the best number one I'll probably ever write, because there was so much stuff to put in there, and you still want the character stuff, because if you don't care about these characters, the idea, the concept of the story has to be so good, and I'll never do that. I'll never have just like a really brilliant idea that people are like, wow, I can't, high concept idea. Like, that's not what I do. I do what if Hitman didn't like his dad and had to live with him.
So much high concept stuff in here, I feel like. And reading this first issue, I feel like to backing Alex's question, like, I feel like you zero in, you sort of toggle back. It's like fun action, heavy emotional, like it's an emotional verbal fight between him and his dad that has just as high stakes. And I feel like moving through the issue, you get that. And then you're like, well, we got to have one more fun thing here at the end. That sort of like a sniper zeroing in on the target, I feel like works. It's so nice. It feels the flow of that.
I think that's extremely kind. I think we've done it with every issue. Like every issue has that balance of all those. Cause I like everything. And we're always trying to make the thing that we exist in the world. And I think that's the easiest way to make them go, oh, I really like this issue. Which I can say sincerely, like one, Steve's amazing. Steve's art's unbelievable. And just looking at that, I go, oh, like I missed this before. He does this funny little thing that I didn't notice because it's so small. Like you make the thing you want. And that's I put a year into this. Like I didn't really do anything else. And again, I kind of screwed myself financially, but which is neither here nor there because it's all going to work out great. It's going to be such a huge, it's going to be such a big success. It's going to be the new absolute Batman. They'll call it absolute end of life. I'll be like, honey, don't worry about it. We can pay the taxes this year. We're hopeful. We're making good books. Yeah. We're making good books. And I like every issue. I'm so far ahead and I'm like, oh, I have to do this issue. Cause Steve needs work. Cause Steve's not stopping. Steve's just going. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I got to reread them to see because I'll forget little things I put in there that are important for later that I wanted to use for later. And like, oh yeah, I got to remember that this character said this thing because part of it was, especially for this, is that this is a theoretical ongoing. Like we could be doing this for the next 20 years. Like if it does well, we could be doing this for a long time. And so just like, I hate this place was supposed to be an ongoing. And I think that's the secret for these number ones. Like you want to set up a whole universe of things that can keep telling more stories. And we have that. Like I could do what I like to call the new universe maxi series run of 32, I think pretty easily. But I'm also ready to wrap it up at 12 if that's what it is. Like sales will decide that, of course, because I have a type of an ending.
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just curious, and I don't know if you can talk about this, but like, are you only contracted for a certain amount? Like obviously the DC wants to make an investment in this, but for example, we're in a world where everybody is jockeying to own Warner Brothers, which owns DC. So who knows what could happen? So TBD on that. But like at this point, are you definite 12 issues? Is it more than that? Where does that fall?
I know for me, it's 12 issues.
Okay.
And that number changed a couple times in regards to how many, I think DC had to decide like what could they afford. I don't know.
Right.
And again, like I know Ezra Cain, the Peril of the Brutal Dark is 6 issues, but it's 6 issues with the hope of doing 6 more. Mm-hmm. I think Bleeding Hearts is ongoing, is theoretical ongoing, like ours is. So I assume that they have 12 issues also. I think there's an 8 issue was at one point being thrown around. So I can't speak for them in specifics, but I mean, on paper, this is an ongoing. On paper, it's an ongoing, but I'm guaranteed 12. So, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I said it. I'm guaranteed 12. I should ask if I can say that. So for sure 12, like I have 12 issue, a 12 issue art.
Too late. And I know we recorded it and there's no way of editing podcasts. Yeah, unfortunately,
this is live too.
I know. It's out there.
If you need to take it out, we'll take it out.
I don't think I have an NDA on my contract or anything. I can say whatever I want. So,
all right. Give us the worst secret they have then real quick.
Yeah. But for DC?
Yeah. For DC, their worst secret.
I really like DC. You'd have to ask me about a different publisher. And you know what? I can't think of any other publishers right now. I can't think of a single one. Everything I've done with DC, I've been extraordinarily pleased with because one, I like it when someone's clearly thinking about things and going, we should try something because things could be better. Like my numbers on Wrestle Heist, which comes out in 2 weeks, no big deal. Are like half of what they were in 2017. When I did Rock Candy Mountain, I had no Eisner nomination. I had one Eisner nomination. No one knew who I was. I hadn't done Rick and Morty for 5 years. You know what I mean? Like those numbers are, they're half. It's significantly different, right? So like you gotta be like, well, we gotta do something. It's like, we should do something. And I'm glad that, and I think notably DC is the one who's like, let's try stuff. So if the retailers say they need ongoings, you get as good a team as you can to do ongoings. I think the side spur Aaron Campbell book is like 8 issues or 6 issues. I'm very excited about that one. I think it's going to be really good. Neither here nor there. That's the one I'm like, that I haven't read. Like I really want to read because the pitch was so good. The pitch at the panel.
The pitch was great.
Panel. Awesome.
Yeah. Like, 100% sold me on that.
Yeah.
You brought up Wrestle Heist. So I wanted to ask you about that real quick. To give context for folks, this is coming out from Image on December 17th. The thing that I wanted to ask you about is you are doing art on that as well. So versus End of Life, where you have Steve Pugh, as you mentioned, like sneaking little things in there and adding things to the comedy. How does that change things for you in terms of how you approach the script? Like when you're doing the art yourself and you're doing the whole thing versus the collaboration with Steve?
It's like a million different ways. Mm-hmm. I am extremely hesitant to give another artist more than 6 panels a page because they're working very hard and it's harder because they're better than me at drawing. It's much more work. I will give Kyle Starks, the artist, endless panels. It doesn't matter. whatever that page needs, whatever the story needs, he'll just do it, which I think is great. I'm very character driven. It allows more character stuff. I know a lot of people are like, oh, we like your, not a lot of people, but like, oh, we like it when you do it better. And I'm like, that's because there's more character stuff. There's more happening. But it's like I've learned how to tell stories with other artists and take advantage of their strengths because I'm an artist. I should do air quotes. I'm an artist too. I think I'm very good at sequential storytelling, and I think my art totally fits with what I generally do with it. But like Steve's unbelievable, but dude, they're working. It's less story art. That's not even true. It's just told differently. So for me, it's like, I'll just add panels. I was looking at something because I'm on issue 4 and it's like, oh, this page is, I was always giving color notes. It's like, oh, it's on panel 9. And I'm like, that seems like weird. That seems like maybe too many panels. And I was like, am I making my colorists do too many panels? I don't even concern about them. Maybe I should, they're fine. so it's just different. I also, and I don't recommend this to anyone. Hey kids, don't listen. I don't use a script for me. It's not improv. Oh, wow. I have a very good idea of what it's going to be. I know all my beats but I just kind of get after it. And that's not recommended either. But because of that, the way that I do it, I can't remember. My friend Andy Hirsch once called it like planned improvisation or something like that. Because I do leave space where I can go, oh, this is a good place for a joke, or this is a good place for a bit. Or I can go while I'm doing it, I go, oh, this should be here. I can go change page 5. It doesn't matter. And I think that gives me like a certain rhythm and the characters have a certain strength of dialogue and characters. So I've taken to now doing like hard thumbnails for when I'm writing other scripts so that I can go, this still has my beats, it still has my rhythm. And then they draw the panels better and they'll do it. I love a 6 panel grid like so much. And they'll like, they're doing like, there's a panel and an angle. Like, I don't do any of that. I just want my story like straight, like an IV into me. Don't give me, I don't want panel. I need panels and I want at least 6.
Well, and one other thing that I feel like you're giving yourself an extra level of difficulty with on Wrestle Heist is you have copious back matter there, which is very fun. But what does that add into the process?
more free work by your boy Kyle Starks. I think I very subtly implied it earlier, but like I kind of hate floppies. I think it's the worst way to consume a story. So because of that, I think like if you're going to make that effort, there should be some sort of added value. I know for End of Life, we're also doing. I'm not sure exactly what the back matter is going to be. For Wrestle Heist, I'm doing two things. Notably, one, I've learned my design level cap. My design skill cap is 70s vintage wrestling magazine. So the back matter looks like it looks like a vintage wrestling magazine. I'm doing all these fake ads. I've done surveys. Like I asked a bunch of peers who like wrestling, which is Condon and Azzarello, both are wrestling boys, amongst I think there's 20 something guys who are either comic creators who I know like wrestling who replied to me, or they're people of note who are adjacent. So like there's a WWE referee and there's some Skybound editors who I know like wrestling and some store owners I know like wrestling. So that's cool because each month I'll ask them a different question. And so you get to see like what's Brian Azzarello's 4 favorite tag teams. You were wondering that. So I think it's cool that I have all these ads and I'm actually doing this thing where like the ads will escalate each issue. So I'm doing kind of little stories with these stupid ads in the background where it's worth it. And the thing is like When we did Six Sidekicks, I'm jumping all over the place, but Schweitzer is loves that stuff. And he's like, oh, it's got to be really good. And so like we went big and I was like, yep, it's only in the issues. Too bad no one will ever see it. And then they put it in the trade. And I'm like, I kind of like that though, because we worked so hard on it. But the nature of this, because it's, I don't want to put 5 pages of ad between each chapter break. I kind of don't want anything between the chapter. I kind of want just to be Skybound style, like straight story. So a lot of stuff just isn't going to make it. Like, it's just not going to be in the book because I can't put it in the back and go, this was issue one, back matter. I mean, I guess I could.
It'd be so thick. It'd be wild at the end.
So it's like, I'll have some of that back matter in there, but a lot of it just won't work. Like anything that's like a story, like a clipping. There's a couple of those, but I kind of get away from it. I start doing like top 10 lists and stuff. It's like that can make it, but I'm doing this, like, I think really funny stuff with these ads. One of the ads is like, do you want to learn how to fight? And it's just a guy in an alley behind an adult bookstore. Well, like in issue two, he's like, why didn't you cowards show up? Like he gets madder and like I'm doing these little, there's guys, they ordered too many wrestling rings. They're trying to sell these wrestling rings because they over ordered and all these little stories. And it's like, I'm escalating them in a way that I think is really fun to make it worth getting each issue. Of course, how many people, like, what does it matter? I don't know. But for me, I think if you're going to buy that floppy, there should be added value. And so I'm doing it for end of life. That canceled cartoonist that I mentioned, I've drawn to the strips. It's called Wrong Dog. Done like 24 of these Wrong Dog strips. I've done a bunch of them. And they're like, oh, we're going to use them. We'll put them on the back of the comic. And I was like, we could just like have like the back cover just be all Wrong Dog strips or something. You know what I mean? Like, they're not hard to do. Like they are kind of hard to do, but, and I know they're going to do, our last I heard is like, so like the front page is going to be like the town newspaper with our credits and other little things. And they're like, so we'll just do this. And it's like, no, we're going to change it every issue. So it's like, there's like the local diner. I was like, let's have their weekly special. And they're like, how many weekly specials are there? And I'm like, no, it's their weekly specials. I'm going to change it. Like, there's only 4 things in this town. So it's like, no, we're going to change it every week. And it's like, they're going to put supposedly 2 Wrong Dogs each month also in there. So there's stuff. Like, are they going to collect those wrong? Are they going to do like a Garfield book of wrong? Why would they? Like, it's just going to exist in this one. Listen, am I going to do it? 100%. Because I put a lot of work into them. I'm gonna get some coffee mugs made. But that's neither here nor there.
You're the new Jim Davis. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it there too. And I think there's talk about maybe trying to figure out some other stuff, which might just be like, Steve sketches for characters, which are, he doesn't even do. So I don't know what that would be. They just show up on the page. Perfect. But I know that they also want to do some sort of additive back matter, for end of life that again, increases the value of it. It there's something extra that you can only get in those floppies, which I think is the way to do those things. I think that's the way to do them.
Well, and that extra care, I feel like, you know, you're not going to, maybe not everyone reads them, but the people that do are like, it adds so much, you know, it pulls you so much deeper into everything. I feel like.
Yeah. And just added value. And I think we need to figure out ways to do that are even outside of, you know, the back matter of comics of how to, and again, I say these things and it's like, will I actually do it? It's like, I need to, I think I'm going to do an issue or like a mini comic that involves one of the characters who after issue 5, it'd be nice to know a little bit more about. And I think I'm gonna put that on my Patreon and then I'm gonna put it in the graph. I'm gonna put it in the trade because, again, even with that trade, I would like for the people who bought the 5 issues to also buy the trade. What a mean trick. And what if I was like, oh, there's an 8-issue comic. You know what I mean? Like, so I just think it's like trying to figure out where this added value are. I think having it'll be on my Patreon for sure is added value to me because social media is gone. Like, how can I get people engaged with me? It's Patreon. And for me specifically, it's Patreon. So we're just trying to figure out how to like, what's added value? What is outside of just people going into comic shops? Because I think that's tough. Even Barnes & Noble is like it's tough to buy comics there. Like you just, and that's a place where people go buy, you know, square things full of paper. So we're just trying to figure out how to be more than just direct market boy, which is, again, has only gone okay. We'll see at the end of life though. Hey guys.
I do want to ask you about a couple of other projects real quick. You got Devil on My Shoulder is coming out from Dark Horse. For anybody who hasn't read it, the first issue, you find this woman who has been tortured for an extended period of time by a bunch of guys. Inexplicably, she is going to come back and get her revenge, but you have a big note right at the top of the issue being like, hey, this is, I'm paraphrasing here, but like, hey, this is really bad. Don't worry. It's going to be worse for the other guys. What led to that?
I think you, so whenever I don't try to do the same thing twice, which isn't intentional. It's that I did it and I'm ready for sort of the next thing. And outside of sort of end of life, which I think is sort of action comedy, which is what my whole career has been in many ways, I really like horror. Mm-hmm. And I did a horror. My first horror was Old Head, which isn't even scary, even a little bit. And then I did I Hate This Place, which I thought was very scary. And it got nominated for Best Hebrew Publication. So it wasn't as scary as I thought it was. And so it was always like, it's like, no, I want to do. And then I was like, you know what? I want to do just a fun one, which is Where Monsters Lie, which is I adore I Hate This Place and Where Monsters Lie. But it's like, oh, I want to do a scary. I want one to be scary. So I did Those Not Afraid, which is about two serial killers who enter a competition to break the state record for murders.
Yes.
Which, by the way, sounds funny. And even as this is no, I'm like, this one's very serious. It's very straight. It's very dark. It's very scary. People are like, it's pretty funny. And I'm like, what? I'm doing something wrong. And I sometimes like, well, I just can't help it. Like, I just can't help it. You know what I like? It's just how I think the characters I like are always charming or funny. And so I want you to care about these characters. They're charming or funny, even if they are serial killers also. It's like, whoops. So for this one, I'm like, I saw something that was a bloody revenge and it escapes me. And that's usually what it is I watch something and I go, oh, I'd like to do a bloody revenge, or I'd like to do an ensemble hitman book. And so it's also a bit like me trying to make correct mistakes because it's like, oh, I didn't quite do it. So like when I did Assassination, I was like, I'm doing a mystery. Well, it's not a very good mystery. It's a pretty bad mystery, honestly. So then I did Six Sidekicks of Trigger Keaton. I was like, well, I'm like, that's a pretty good mystery, but it's not a great mystery. And then I did Pine and Merrimack. And Pine and Merrimack was the one I was like, I think I got mystery out of me, or I would have loved to have done, you know, five of those books, but that was like, I get the mystery out of me. It's like, if you love horror, even if you love, they were raised on sort of silly horror, which I was, which are kind of my favorites. I want to do something scary and I want to do a revenge. And I think that they require one, awful things have to happen. I think there's a few people who are like, they're like, well, it's like fetishizing like torture. I'm like, well, it's a horror book. Yeah. I didn't enjoy any of this. Mm-hmm. And I hope you didn't enjoy it. I hope you go, this is ghastly and it's awful that's happened to this person. But the point of that trigger is going, this first issue sucks. Like this first issue for this girl, I think it's a really good issue. I think Peter Kowalski did a killer job on it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's going to be like, we're engaged in a story. Like I'm not selling you one issue. Maybe other people can do one issue at a time. It's like, I can't do that. I'm trying to tell you a story. And the story is like something terrible is going to happen to this person. But I promise. And like, wait till you see the opening of issue 2. I promise it's very cathartic. Like, you know what it was? Actually, I can tell you what it was, is that I believe Schweitzer and I, we'd been talking about like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is very sort of revisionist history and how it's like, what a weird, we're talking about Inglourious Basterds probably because I made a poster. I made a poster that no one bought. It's so dumb. Anyway, that I had just learned about this girl, Junko Furuta, and don't look it up. It's like one of the worst things that's ever happened to a human. Period, that it's just other humans being awful, awful. It's terrible. And I think there's some of like, well, I feel like she should have got her revenge, which is unfortunately passed away. I was like, that type of person, that real thing, they should have their revenge. But then it sort of expands as all things do. It's like it goes past just like an awful thing. Like it's going to be a little supernatural. It's got a little bit of a crow thing going on, right? Like we exist in a certain world. I think I'm really proud of it. But yeah, that first issue sucks, man. And it's like, I hate it. But it's like, if you don't do anything bad to this girl, then what do you care? Like, you just, like, mm-hmm.
You got to set the trap. You got to set the trap for everything. And I think 100%. It really does. And we got to read the second issue. And like you're saying, that is, it's really horrifying. But obviously, we're not going to say. It's very good. Yeah. It's
that
very well.
Sequence,
yes.
And let me tell you, which, like, shout out to my editor, Daniel Chabonnet. A Dark Horse. When we did that first issue, we pulled it back. Like there's certain things I had in there and it's like, I'm glad they're not in there, but there's sort of things that always happen in bloody revenges. Like you can jump to your own conclusion. It's probably correct. And it's like, whenever we did it on, like it was implied, things were implied and they're like, eh. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. What if we made a bloody revenge that didn't have SA in it basically. Right. Or didn't have really some pretty bad, like worse stuff happening to the, like it's kind of bad enough as it ended up being. I'm like, that is correct. But I got a lot of, like, not a lot of notes, but a lot of, like, we should be careful here. She's in issue 1, like, she is found in present time after we flash back. Like, she's half naked in the water. And it's like, let's be very careful with how, like, it's this whole thing, right? We got to be very careful, very careful. And then at the very first 3 pages, something so outrageously despicable she does to one of these boys And like, it's Peter is so good at doing, because he's Polish, he's so good at doing graphic awful things, which is why I wanted to do this book with him. Is like, we did Where Monsters Lie, and I'm like, dude, he could do some really messed up things. And they said nothing. Like, anything bad that happens to any of these men, they said nothing. And I'm like, but you know what? That's correct. Like, they all deserve it. It should be worse. And that's what I wanted. Like, when I watch A Bloody Revenge, you get to the part where you go, yeah, she, whatever she does, they have coming. Whatever she does, no matter how bad it is, they have it coming. And we like that. Like, we like seeing, I think it's not about a girl being tortured. It's about a girl getting revenge. Mm-hmm. But you have to have that. So it's mixed. It's funny. Peter said he's never had a perfect score. But we had a perfect score from a couple places on them. He's like, I've never had it. One, I was like, Where Monsters Lie? I didn't get it. What the heck? That book is great. But there's also a lot of people being like, it's kind of disgusting. It's like, yeah, it's a horror. That's why I put that notice. I mean, that's why I did it. Like, that's a long way to get to it. Because I want people to go like, hey, this isn't funny. This isn't Where Monsters Lie. Like, this is not a good time. This is awful. But it's worth seeing what happens next. Because I think if you go, I kind of want to see issue 2, right? Like, I didn't like that. It made me uncomfortable, which it should. I'm going to look at issue. I think issue 2, you go, oh, wait, like, that's kind of great. Like, well, that's awesome.
Yeah, you're with her so hard on the, like, even if you're not a, like, violence-chasing person. But I love the villains, even in that second issue, are like, whoa, that was too fucked up. Which I thought was a really funny response from them. Yeah. But one thing I want to talk about with the book is the thing that really stuck out to me, besides the very satisfying revenge journey, is the time dilation you're using in there, which feels like...
I love a flashback.
Well, and you sort of gradate, I don't want to say too much, but you gradate it in a way that enhances the revenge part really well. And like, how did that come together in the book?
Again, you make the thing that you wish. I love flashbacks. And I think for this one, and it only goes back like so far, like T's flashback is what you see at the beginning. Like, we don't go back on her anymore. Cause she was just a normal,
right,
trying to make it through her days girl, just like a normal human. But you go back with Father Guerrero because he has, a very interesting backstory. But I love that. I love everything matter. I love a whole lifetime mattering. I do a lot of flashbacks. Wrestle Heist has a lot of flashbacks, but there are heist flashbacks. So, like, in issue 4 and especially 5, when you start seeing, like, oh, there's machinations that have been played. Like, there's flashbacks, which is great because I don't have to draw those panels again. I just use the same ones and we color them differently. But I love that kind of storytelling. And if you look at all my, I do it a lot. Like, I just love flashbacks. Yeah. And I do think Devil on My Shoulder is my best use of flashbacks.
It's really well done.
Of how to wrap this up and how to, the hardest part is figuring out the timing. And I'm learning this now in Wrestle Heist, honestly, where you go, this is happening because of this. It will be important later. When do you say that? When do you say what the important thing was? That isn't so early, it ruins the surprise. Do you do it after the twist? And then they're like, well, they'll think that I didn't set it up. No, it's like, I set it up. It's all there. Everything matters. There's nothing incidental in any of my stuff, unfortunately, because I'm crazy. so I love it. I do think Devil on My Shoulder does the best job of it. Again, we just wrapped, 4's been done for a while, but I just looked at it a couple of months ago, and it's with Peter almost every time where I go, man, it's exactly what I wanted it to be. I feel the same way about End of Life. I feel the same way about Kind and Merrimack. I've been very lucky, but Peter and Steve, like, every show I go, yep, that's exactly what it's supposed to be. And that's the best feeling because I wrote it, 6 months ago, and who knows if I was any good 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I knew what I want. I knew what I wanted it to be then, but time passes. I think all four, it's like that 4 issues is, it's dark and it's disturbing. Yes. But I think if you are a fan of revenge, and I love it. I love crime revenge. I love all types of revenge. But I love a bloody horror, and I don't think they've done a bloody horror in a while, a bloody revenge. And I think it did exactly what I wanted to do, and that's the best feeling. And hopefully people talk about it, like, hopefully it sells some issues.
It really had me wishing there were more people she needs revenge on. So unfortunately, it's a pretty limited. Well, you go through them sort of fast.
Honestly. it's all going somewhere, though. It's going
Of course.
We got a plan.
You had mentioned Where Monsters Lie. Are we going to be seeing a volume 3 of that at some point?
Well, so I did a Kickstarter. I did a Kickstarter for volume 3. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole different story. I don't know if you remember when earlier I said, talking about the industry, is my favorite and least favorite thing to talk about. But we did a Kickstarter. We did a 48-page Kickstarter for volume 3. Long story short, volume 1 sold out. Bram Stoker were nominated. It did great. Volume 2, no one even knew it came out. Like, it just, there were no sales. And because of that, Dark Horse, which rightly, though it probably should have done better, there are probably things that could have been done, but rightly, they couldn't justify doing a third issue. After one did so well and I was doing a second, I was like, I want to do three arcs. I had my idea. I want to do it. And I was like, and if it's a huge success, which is what I always like to think, and it never is, but that's neither here nor there. If it's a huge success, I'll do a fourth one. And then on the fourth one, I'll put them in space, because that's what all horror franchises do when they go too far. So I was like, I hope I don't do four, because that's not a very good story. But I had this third story, and Peter, who I love working with, was like, we're going to do a third, right? And they're like, well, we didn't make any money. And I said, well, I think we could do luckily they're Polish. Again, they don't make, like, the dollar translates very well. Like, what's your rate? I was like, I think we could do this many pages at where we all get paid our rate. You know, we can make 48 page comic basically. It's like, what's 80 to 48? Like, I think I can do it. And so he's on, I think he's got 20 pages done now. He's a little bit behind, but he knows he's doing the best he can. But we want to send it out in February. But both his cover and my cover are available in my store to pre-order, which means you pay for them now, and I will send them to you when I get them. Are available in my store, kylestarks.com. They're like $15 and $20. It's my understanding that there's probably an intent to collect it at some point in time, because that's free for Dark Horse to do. They don't have to pay me. I already made it. You know what I mean? But that's hopefully down the line, because we want to get these out. It's great. It's one of the things, like, so many people, it's funny, like, I did Heroes Con, which is my favorite show. And at Heroes Con, these people who I see every year who are fans of mine, who follow me on social media, again, social media is what it is, like, oh, there's a volume two. And I'm like, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, there is. It's weird you don't know about it, but also not weird at all. But the number of people, I specifically say, like, David Harper, who we adore at Sketch, was like, I like volume two better. And like, yeah, there's more character stuff in it. Like, it does more Kyle Starks things. So I think you would like it better. But it also is like, it's such a good premise, which is there's basically gated communities for slasher monsters to go to, and they have like a structure to support them, but they still have to mow their lawn. Anyway, the second one's the same thing again. It's just it's a horror franchise to me. Yeah. And so I love, like, oh, well, now they're at the hillbilly gated community, where all the hillbillies live. And in volume three, which is a 48, I hate calling it volume three because it's a one shot. The annual, we'll call it the annual.
There you go.
That's how we used to do it. Like, they go to Japan because I wanted to do Asian monsters so bad, and they go to hell because of course they do. it's really good. I'm really pleased with it. I can't wait for it to come out. I'd be sad that all the We're Monster Live fans probably won't see it, but it's like, well, they didn't see volume two either. So I don't know. For all the people who've been there with me the whole time, it's very rewarding and very fun. Comics, man, they're hard.
Yeah. And I did want to ask you about one last thing. Kill Them All. There was a movie that is in pre-production or was in pre-production. Not so much.
Listen, nothing's ever going to happen. I don't mean with Kill Them All. I mean, maybe for Kill Them All specifically, it was something that they optioned for a really good amount. Thank you, Aiden. that also, by the way, I've been extremely fortunate with Hollywood support. I have a very good agent, and it's never a lot of money, but it's enough that I don't worry about bills for a couple months, right? And because of a lot of things for the last year and a half, 2 years, there's been no movement there. So it's like, usually I would get, and I know I'm bragging, like a $5,000 check, like one. And I'm like, heck yeah, like, what if a comic gave me $5,000? That'd be crazy. And it didn't happen. So, like, one more thing that kind of was a pain. So they optioned it for a very good amount. Good job, agent. They maybe renewed it once. I don't think that happened. I think when it came that they were going to renew it, they bought it. And when they buy something outright, it means instead of having it for 18 months, they have it for like 5 to 7 years, and they pay a lot of money. That money's all gone because it was pandemic. It's 6 years ago at this point. Wife got a new car. That's great for her. The thing is, like, because they put actual money into it, like almost close to Hollywood money, they are more involved enough that, so like, there's Sam Hargraves was connected. He's the second director connected. Sam Hargraves did Extraction, which is really good on Netflix. It's a really great action movie. So he was attached. The lady before was the lady who worked on the Old Guard. So she's gone. Okay. Well, there's been at least three or four scripts, which they have to pay that guy probably $50K every time he writes a script. They're getting better, you know. The director will come in and change all that stuff anyway. Like, will it happen? I don't know. Probably not. If they do, that's a very good day for me. The day they turn the lights on will be the best day of my life. Will probably be, so probably like my mom will die that day too, but something bad will happen to offset it. But it'll be a really good day financially. Thanks, Aiden. So yeah, all that
as long
stuff
as you're on the carousel, it's nice. Nice to be in the game. At least, I gotta think.
Here's the thing. I think about like 7 years ago because my first book was Sex Castle, and it was optioned before it came out. So and it got nominated for an Eisner. So it had all this buzz. Like it did pretty well. It still does well. It's pretty good. I think that helps. It's pretty good. It's pretty fun. But I've optioned almost everything that I've owned at least once. The only thing that I haven't optioned once that I own, that which is to say Image specifically, is Old Head, which, listen, we get it. That's a weird one. It's good, but it's weird. That's a tough sell. And we talked to a bunch of people who were interested in it, but it just didn't work out. So I've been very fortunate. And a lot of those, I get like one renewal, which is a less amount, but will anything happen, man? I don't know. Probably not. I don't hold my breath, but every time I get an option and they announce it, in my head, it sells 1,000 books. And I don't think that's true anymore, but I think people go, oh, they might make a movie of it. Let's check it out. And 7 years ago, it would have sold 1,000. Yeah. And you go, they're going to make a movie of it? I'll check it out.
Well, okay, that might not be coming out, or maybe it will be coming out, but we do know that End of Life number one is definitely 100% coming out February 18th, 2026. Everybody should definitely check it out. Kyle, thank you for taking so much time.
So much
thank
time.
You for
it's
talking.
Great.
We appreciate it.
Oh, I like talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Us
the
too.
Book's great. I can't wait to
really
follow along with it and see
both,
where it goes.
All three books.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Kyle.
That's very kind. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me jabber. You the yapper from way back.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.